Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we're doing a little bit of a different episode. We're just going to do a ramble episode where there's no topic, there's no format. We're just going to ramble on, see what we talk about, comic related, movie related, have some fun. So, of course, I'm my co-host, Jake from Saskatoon.
Good evening.
Also with us is Red Ink.
No.
So, last weekend, Red and I, with our friend Neil, we were watching, I saw for the first time through the beginning to end, David Lynch's Dune.
How'd you like it?
I don't know.
And that's the right answer.
Like, I almost want to read the books, but the books look really hella thick, so I don't know. People are telling me the new movie is really fucking good. I don't know. How about you, JT? Are you a Dune guy?
I liked the movie growing up. Like, my first experience with Dune is the same as my first experience with Return of the Jedi. Because you remember Marvel used to have, like, the big magazine-sized edition graphic novels. It was, like, about the width and length. You know, looked like it would match up with National Enquirer magazine. And I had a couple of those in my school library, and that's how I first saw those movies. So, I mean, this looked, you know, I thought Dune looked really interesting. And, you know, fear is the mind killer. And, you know, it's like that guy kind of looks Sting. Like, I showed my mom the book and the art, and it's like, yeah, that does this. Sting's in that movie. And I was like, it's a movie? You know? And it wasn't for years later. Like, I was probably grade 11, possibly grade 12 in high school before I saw the movie. It was like the extended cut. I can't remember if it was a double tape rental or not from one of the video stores back home in Yorkton. So, but I always liked the movie. Like, I've never read the novels, but, you know, for what it was, I really enjoyed it. And then, you know, over the years, learn, like, you know, the history and the backstory of what went on with that film and how Lynch kind of disowns the movie now, despite whenever it's put on DVD or Blu-ray, it says David Lynch's Dune, and it's like, nope, not mine. But I enjoyed it.
All right.
Well, there was so much fucking, like, corporate shenanigans, like people sticking their fingers in the fucking movie. And David Lynch doesn't like it. Because there's so much fucking narration. And what do you call it? Like, what the fuck?
Monologues. Foreshadowing.
Starts with an E.
Exposition?
Exposition, yes.
Yeah. That's one thing that struck me. There was one scene where they had a flashback, exposition, and monologue all in the same scene.
Yeah, because it wasn't until after. I know I saw the extended cut first, because the first time I saw the movie, it opens with that expositional thing, but instead of hearing Virginia Madsen's voice, you actually see Virginia Madsen all done up and, you know, narrating to the camera and thus the audience.
Oh, and one last thing.
Then she fades a bit, fades away, comes back like Columbo.
Yeah. I mean, and this was like the first time, I know I saw it in high school, because this was like the first time I had seen Patrick Stewart in anything other than Star Trek.
And he was hamming it up.
Yeah, but I allow it because it's Patrick fucking Stewart. I have absolutely no problem with that. But I know, I even, like, I love this movie for a lot of the same reasons. I love a lot of, you know, B and C and Z grade movies that I've seen over. Like, just the level of camp and the, you know, you see the outlines with some of the photo composites and that janky ass quote unquote CGI they used for, like, the force shields. And
that wasn't CGI.
That was animated. Yeah,
they were painting they were painting that on the frames.
I didn't know that. But yeah, no, I on a level 1 to 5 levels, this is like a level 1. I love this movie. It's just, yeah, there are flaws, but I mean, What's one of the good bad things you like about this movie, Ben?
There's this hilarious scene where Patrick Stewart runs in the battle carrying a pug.
Oh God!
And, I remember that. And there's another another scene where oh my God, there's another fucking scene where Patrick Stewart meets fucking what's his name, Paul Fusrado or whatever they call him.
Kyle MacLachlan.
Yeah, and he has long hair but bald at the same time, and that I couldn't stop laughing at that too. What else? Sting was like kept on showing up just to sort of strut around and like I seem to remember him like wearing a G-string and like air humping for a scene. Did that happen, or is my mind making that up?
He's not wearing a G-string. He comes out wearing like fucking He-Man Eagle fucking shorts.
Okay.
Yeah, out of some steam, and then he's fucking sitting there with a creepy smile on his face. And
was he air humping though?
No.
Okay.
There's like the guy who played Baron Harkonnen. I don't remember if I had nightmares after that, but it's just there's like the level of slime and whatever they use to paint his face, so he just looks like perma sweaty like that, just unnerved me.
Herpes is a terrible disease.
Yeah. And I love that fight with Paul and whatever Sting's character's name is, I always forget, but just at the end where he like Fusro does him and like cracks the earth and everyone's like, oh shit, he's the chosen one.
My name is a killing word. And Red made some very well-timed Einhart and Hinkle jokes.
Oh yeah, I keep forgetting she's in that. Because I think I've only four movies total I've ever seen that actress in. And her name escapes me right now.
Sean Young.
Thank you. First, the time I saw her was Ace Ventura, then Dune, then Blade Runner, and finally, because this was in the depths of my watching any movie that was even remotely connected with the famous Universal Monster movies.
Oh,
was,
Jesus Christ.
Dr. Jekyll and Ms. Hyde.
Isn't that?
Yeah, she plays Ms. Hyde.
Yeah, oh. Tim Daly turns into Sean Young.
Huh. I don't remember that.
And you're better off for it, believe me.
Funny story about Sean Young is she was pretty much guaranteed the role of Catwoman in Batman Returns. And then, what's his name? Tim Burton called her and says, oh, yeah, sorry, we gave the role to Michelle Pfeiffer instead. And
didn't she go on, like, talk shows?
Yeah,
and,
she
like,
would fucking.
Catwoman regalia?
Yeah, she would fucking insane and start going on talk shows and Catwoman regalia and, like, acted like the 1960s Catwoman with all the purring words and shit, and she was like fucking nuts for like a week because she really wanted that fucking role.
She saw the future and knew comic book movies were going to be big eventually.
But like I said, that's just one of the weird things about Sean Young. Dune, it's a movie, and I saw it, and now I have that crossed off my list. I guess next is Ishtar.
Nah, I'm good. There are certain movies, like, I've mentally compiled the list over years, but I haven't ever written out, so I actually remember, but I know from what I've heard about Ishtar, that's on the list of, like, I don't care if I never see that movie. You know, it's...
Savior of the Universe.
I love that fucking movie. I would love to watch that movie with you guys.
Yeah, that was like my favorite bit in Ted, where Sam, God, names escape me today. Where Flash shows up at the party and Ted and Marky Mark are just like, just awestruck like that. He's talking about classic movies like this, and this couldn't ask for a better segue. Like, I've I'm still going through the somewhat Herculean task of, you know, sorting through my collection, you know, separating the wheat from the chaff and all that. And I forgot, I have like the complete run of this Dark Horse comic book series called Grindhouse Doors Open at Midnight from about 8 years ago. And this was like at a time where
JT, just a question. Is this related to the Robert Rodriguez Grindhouse?
I was actually kind of dovetailing into that. Because it's not related to that precisely. It came out in and around the same time of those movies, I believe. And there was just this huge glut for a few years after the Robert Rodriguez Grindhouse films that people just came up with like a batshit insane drive-in movie concept and would just apply the term Grindhouse to it, whether or not it actually kind of fit, because I guess there is some specific criteria that, you know, defines this as Grindhouse. Like there was I've got this comic series also called Kiss Me Satan, where this witch who's going to give birth to this, you know, prophesied child who will either, you know, save the world or condemn it to eternal torment as being protected by this hitman who turns out to be this escaped demon from hell who's being made to earn his redemption by protecting, you know, this kid. And there's all sorts of stuff like that. But I love this series because, like, there's some of these concepts that were in the story. I just had so much fun reading. Like, there's a Bee Vixens from Mars about these alien women that come to Earth. And they look like, think, you know, Daisy Duke, but with, like, hiding her insect eyes behind these Elton John sunglasses. There's the Bride of Blood, which is kind of like this knockoff of the slightly lesbianic Carmen vampire movies from like the 60s and early 70s. And I just really, I miss comics like when stuff like this would come out in stores. So I've just had a lot of fun going through this, like different writers, different artists. And just think of like that, this spate of comics that came out in this time. Like there's also Ghosted, which is what if Danny Ocean from Ocean's 11 tried to rob a haunted house. And that's only like the first arc. From there, it just gets wilder and crazier with all this stuff. And I just kind of miss grindhousey, for lack of a better word, like these sort of like these kind of comics. And it just, they don't make it anymore. Like, have you guys ever read anything that would kind of, you would classify as a grindhouse story of that sort?
No.
Not really, no. It's, I remember seeing a comic that sounded like that, but I didn't pick it up. It was, I don't forgot the title of it, but it was like about vampire hillbillies that ran a barbecue restaurant in the deep south. I sort of saw the cover, I read the synopsis, I'm like, nope, not for me.
Yeah. I just really enjoyed
it. All I picture is JT looking at his comic collection. I gotta throw things out. Can't throw this out.
You're making it sound like he's on fucking fucking Hoarders. Fucking TNT's okay. Hoarders.
Red is not completely off base with that comment, but I assure you I've gotten much better. It's literally, I have two piles. Is I'm definitely going to reread this, and why did I spend the money on this in the first place? And honestly, that second pile is slowly growing bigger. I'm looking at
there's certain, like, three comics, and the other pile has like 50 fucking comics.
You know, it hurts that you have no faith in me, Reddit. Really hurts.
He's got faith of the horror.
So yeah,
JT, you just can't throw out the Little Lulu comics or the Archie comics, all right?
I actually got rid of all my Archie comics, and I never had any Little Lulu comics. I did have some Richie Rich, but I got rid of those years ago.
Did you at least throw out all the Ken Pender Sonic comics you had?
I never really had any of those comics, Ben.
Never really or never? Because never really sounds like you'd bite half.
Maybe when I was a kid, but not in the last however many years. I liked reading the Sonic comics. I just never collected them. I mean, the only Archie comics I really collected in my life was like the TMNT Adventure series and a couple of the Exigent special series that Archie put out, like Explorers of the Unknown, because at the time I was rereading like DC 100 page spectacular reprints of Challengers of the Unknown, so I dug that title. And Archie's RC Racers, where Archie and Reggie are racing each other across America in like customized RVs that have these bubble dome tops so they can drive these souped up RC cars across America. And of course they're being chased by, you know, Mr. Weatherby and the rest of the teaching staff from Riverdale High, because they have to have those characters in the story somehow.
So it's like Smoking the Bandit but with RC characters.
Yes, and Mr. Weatherby does pull off a Sheriff Buford T. Justice rather well. But yeah, no, I'm just like going through. I also found another one that's kind of the grindhousey thing is the five ghosts of Fabian Gray, where this guy, Fabian Gray, he's like a, think more Nathan Drake than Indiana Jones, relic hunter who has this thing called a dream stone embedded in him, and he can assume the aspect of the wizard, the archer, the detective, the samurai, and the vampire. And it's all like, you know, Merlin, Robin Hood, Sherlock, I think it's Masamune and Dracula, and has these weird, you know, pulpy, grindhousey adventures. And, you know, I love stories like that. You know, just clearly good and evil, little shades of gray, but not much. You know, the kind of thing that would probably get you canceled nowadays if you say out loud in public that you enjoy these sort of stories. Because
Well, what you said there vaguely reminds me of a series that Red got me hooked on. It's a really great series of series, I should say. A franchise, if you will. Have you ever heard of Fate?
Fate. Well, I've heard of Dr. Fate, but...
No. Fate is a franchise. It's a game franchise from Japan. It also has half a dozen anime series. There's manga.
Fate.
Yeah.
Oh, I have heard of it. I've never dug into it because a friend of mine looked at me and was like, John, you will not survive this rabbit hole.
Oh, it's fun. You should dive in. It's good. It's nice. So Fate is about this world. You know, it's about an Earth where like every so often years you have the Holy Grail War, and the Holy Grail is this thing that can grant a wish. And you have these mages that have to summon heroic spirits from Earth's mythology and past to do battle for them to win the Holy Grail. And there are several classes of different heroic spirits. There's archer, saber, berserker, rider, caster, and I think I'm forgetting one. Lancer. And
rider.
Rider. I thought I said rider, but it is a great franchise. There's lots of different paths, and from what Red told me, like we were watching this, I was getting into it. Red says, "You want to know what the first game was? What genre the first game was?" I'm like, "What?" He says, "It's a dating sim."
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
When we were watching the anime, I was like pointing out to Ben, like, this is where they're probably fucking in the game.
So, lots of the heroic spirits from the past are slightly different than the history books say, in interesting ways. Red, you tell them about King Arthur.
Well, King Arthur is a girl, for one thing.
Wait. Is that the blonde with, like, the blue and silver get-up, and she's...
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Isn't, like, Hercules supposed to be, like, this big red-haired barbarian that's, like, a berserker or something?
He is the berserker class in that instance.
Huh. I mean, it sounds really interesting, but like my friend Lauren, she showed me this video. I think it was one of two videos that Gigak did on YouTube, this anime reviewer, talking about trying to explain the Fate franchise. And I've seen snarled up balls of yarn that made more sense than this franchise's timeline.
Oh, don't worry about the fucking timeline. Just watch it and have fun.
All right.
I have another friend named Robert. Different Robert than the Robert I knew in high school. This Robert I knew after college, so it's a different guy. And I was talking to Robert while Red was showing me Fate. I'm like, I really like this series. This is really nice. And Robert's like, what's the order Red's making you watch? I'm like, oh, we started with Fate Zero. Then we did Fate Stay Night, Unlimited Blade Works. And Robert's like, freaking out. He's like, no, you're watching it in the wrong order. There's an order you have to watch it. You're watching it in the wrong order. You can't watch it chronologically. It's like watching the prequels before Star Wars. You can't do that. I'm like, what? Like, he was freaking the fuck out about my watching order, and he's like, you have to watch the original Fate Stay Night. You can't go just jump into Unlimited Blade Works. You can't do that. I'm like, but Red told me that the original Fate Stay Night's garbage. And he's like, no, you have to watch Saber Path. You have to watch Saber Path. I'm like,
well, the paths come from the video games. There's three leading ladies in the anime. There's Rin, there's Sakura, and there's Saber. Saber is Arthur, by the way. The first time they ever animated the series, they animated the Saber Path, which is basically the main character falls in love with Arthur, tries to protect her, tries to treat her like a little woman, and convinces her she's a poor woman, and he's tough, and he's a big man, and he's tough, and he can protect her and all this shit, and they fall in love, but they can't be together because she's actually a magic spirit, blah, blah, blah. It sucks. Lots of people fucking... I don't give a shit that lots of people love the Saber Path. It's, frankly, the one that I hate the most.
And
go ahead. Then there's Unlimited Blade Works, which is the Rin Path, which in the game, if you romance Rin, it's what takes place. And it reveals a lot of the history especially for one of the fighters in the fucking
Fate Night.
In Fate Night. But Ben also, it has a strong connection to Fate Zero. It's actually strong. In my opinion, it's way strongly, it has a stronger connection to Fate Zero than all the other ones. And Ben told me he understood Fate. He understood the fucking series a lot better because he watched Fate Zero.
Yeah, because they introduced Sakura when you first see her in Fate Zero, which is the prequel series, is like this poor little girl who's being tortured by her grandfather to house evil magic bugs and shit. And so she's like got the evil magic bugs in her like that fucking weird ninja from Naruto, but she's also dang nasty evil. She's a dang nasty evil child.
But if you watched Fate without watching Fate Zero, you'd think that she's the girl next door. She's
yes,
so cute and so lovely, and I should go on her path and romance her. The Sakura path, story-wise, is the worst one. It is my second favorite. It is not my favorite. Like I said, Unlimited Prey to the Works is my favorite. Sakura Path is fucking crazy because she goes... I don't want to spoil it because Ben hasn't watched it yet. And I found a copy and I was thinking of showing it to Ben.
Mm-hmm.
But
it gets fucking nuts.
She's fucking dang nasty evil. I knew that when I saw her as a child. She's dang nasty evil. I don't want to see her as a teenager that's even more dang nasty evil. Kind of scary. But Rin is the best path. Like, in the main character's name who escapes me.
Shiro.
He's an interesting character. He's not a great character, but he's also not an overpowered main character either. He, like, through three-fourths of the series, he has to go through being drastically, woefully, pathetically underpowered compared to all the other mages. Like, Like, his whole thing is he is, like, pathetic. He is weak. He, like, his servant Saber has to protect him because, and Rin has to protect him because he gets, like, really uppity about, you know, this is my sense of justice, and he gets in this situation he can't get out of, and then these two chicks have to fucking save his fucking hide because he couldn't stay quiet for 10 seconds. Blade Works had one of the best lancers I've ever seen, Cú Chulainn, or however you pronounce it, the greatest hero in Irish mythology and history. He's a fucking beast. Do you know the legend of him, JT?
Not so much. I remember the character being in an episode of Gargoyles back in the day, but
that's
about it.
That's fucking watered down, like fuck. Like, I've read the legend. He fucking got mortally wounded, and there was an army approaching. And to keep the army at bay because he was losing strength, he took out his own intestines and tied it around a fucking boulder to keep himself standing up to fight the army.
Really?
And his corpse continued to fight for a fucking week, even though he was dead. And the only way the army wouldn't approach, the only way they approached is a bird finally landed on his shoulder and he didn't do anything about it.
Wow.
And it's kind of funny because the Lancer hero in Fate Zero was another Irish hero whose name escapes me.
Dermud?
Yes. And they have very similar looks, but they obviously look two different people as well. They both also suffered very similar fates between, you know, Fate Stay Night Unlimited Blade Works and Fate Zero. They both were ordered by their master to stab themselves in the heart. And, minor spoiler, but it's funny because the Lancer in Fate Zero just started whining and crying and cursing his master. while Cú Chulainn, he fucking stabbed himself in the heart. He has no heart anymore. And because of his legend, he kept on fucking moving around and doing shit for 5 minutes. He saved the fucking girl. He was fucking chivalrous to the end. He had, like, the best Lancer ending.
It sounds delightfully batshit insane, and I probably dip my toes into that eventually.
I think it's nice. I think it's fun. The franchise is weird, and if you try to, like, put a continuity behind it, you'll have a fucking spider web on a board, like fucking what's his name from It's Always Sunny.
The Pepe Silvia.
There's also lots of other side series. Like, there's Fate Apocrypha, which is, like, in a slightly different timeline than Fate Stay Night. Of another Holy Grail war, where you have, like, two sets of servants fighting each other, like red versus black, and one team are Nazis. It's funny because when I first found out about Fate Stay Night and Fate in the full franchise, I said to Red, I really would love to see one day a showdown from one of Charlemagne's paladins in a Knight of the Round Table. And we got that in Fate Apocrypha. It's just, when I saw this fight, the two combatants, I said, I know I said I wanted this, but Red says, you didn't want the duds?
Well, Mordred is fucking badass. I'll say that.
That's true.
But Astafo, I'm sorry, he's not He's not as good as the other paladins.
That's true, but he did have several good showings, and he did stay faithful in action to his character of being extremely honorable to a fault. And the end, final episodes, man, he fucking kicked. But yeah, Mordred, you know, Mordred is the Knight of the Round Table we're talking about, and Mordred's a chick as well, but Mordred's like a gangster girl.
Like do-rag, wifey.
No, Japanese gangster girl.
Oh, Yakuza.
No. It's a type of style that's in Japan.
Okay.
Yeah. And like I said, I've been talking to lots of other friends about Fate, but my friend Robert is just like seething because he thinks I have the completely wrong impression of the whole franchise because I watched this, I watched the order wrong. And I'm like, okay, I'll, and there's a new, there's the current Fate series, or I won't say current, but is from this game called Fate Grand Order, which also has a couple of different pieces of media with it, a movie, one anime series, and a movie series. And those are being released out of chronological order because the game it's based off of has everything in a chronological order, but all the ancillary media comes out in whatever order based off of, like, fan votes and shit.
Well, there's two movies, sets of movies. There's the Paladin movies, which currently are being released, and then there's also the Solomon movies, the final battle.
Mm.
But those haven't been released yet.
And, my friend Robert really fucking loves, like, the Paladin movies, the Camelot movies, because there was this alternate version of Arthur he really fucking loves.
So she was a redhead instead of a blonde, or?
Like, no, it's the way that the Fate, what's it called?
Well, the Fate lore is when Arthur pulled the sword from the stone, she stopped aging. So she was a 14-year-old girl, well, 15-year-old girl the whole fucking time that she's been alive. In the Paladin arc, she abandoned fucking Excalibur, and she started to age. So she's an adult woman in the Paladin arc.
Okay.
With huge tits.
Well, anime.
And like I said, for like a week, Robert's talking to me. Oh, the Lion King. Oh my God, the Lion Goddess or the Lion God or whatever he was saying. And just over and over and over again. And just Red says to me, you know, she fucking like absorbs people's mana to stay alive and shit. So she's fucking evil. And I'm like, oh, okay. When Red said to me, like, oh, okay, that's not very attractive anymore.
What a good looking woman that sucks the life out of men. Gee, I haven't heard of that trope before. And if you listen carefully, you can hear the rest of the internet coming from my hide right now.
But overall, I think just Fate is an interesting series, and I would recommend it. Like, watch Igorishi, watch JT, whatever one you fucking want.
Just pick one and go with it?
Yeah, fuck it. Don't listen to people who say, oh, you have to start with Fate Grand, you know, Fate Stay Night, and you have to watch the Saber Path, and you have to watch the Sakura Path, and you have to watch the Rin Path, then you have to go back and then watch Fate Zero, then you have to go and buy the mobile game, spend $600 on the mobile game. Then you play through the mobile games. Then you watch Fate Grand Order. But first the movie. Then you don't do fucking anything because the other stuff hasn't come out yet. Because you have to watch it in order. Tell those people to fuck off.
The reason I gave you Fate Zero first is Fate Zero is fucking awesome.
It is fucking awesome.
Like, Ryder is like the best fucking character.
It's fucking Alexander the Great. Now, the other thing I have to say that really painted my perception of the characters is when I watched Fate Zero, I did not have the impression that Saber was a weak-willed teenage girl that was thrust into becoming King Arthur. I thought Saber or Arthur was a fully realized knight and character that was very independent and strong and had a very strong moral compass. And I watched Fate Zero and I had that impression of her. And then when we started watching Fate Unlimited Blade Works and she pops up, I'm like, oh, this is the same Arthur. I get it. I know who this is. And then, and also in Fate Unlimited Blade Works, he isn't really trying to be like, I'll have to save Saber. He wasn't like that with her. So I didn't feel this whole, you know, Saber waifu thing, because she felt so much more mature than the other characters and so much more like an adult and independent that I never had this image of her that someone who started Fate, you know, with the Saber Path movie would have, if that makes sense.
I understand. A little confusing, but I get that. The only other anime that I've watched recently, like I recently reactivated my Netflix because I hadn't used that for a couple of years, and I finally got around to watching the Godzilla Singular Point anime series. And it's okay. I just find it confusing, like the redesigns of some of the characters and the story overall. Like, it gets way into this meta material that somehow is responsible for the kaiju, and it exists. Like, they keep talking about this thing, like it's created these things. You don't really get an answer where the monsters come from by the end. The biggest thing that I took away from this was, aside from the janky-ass Jet Jaguar that they have in here that I fucking love, was they treat Godzilla kind of like how they treated the King of the Monsters in Shin Godzilla. Like, have either of you guys seen that one?
No.
Well, the basic thing in there is, like, when Godzilla pops out of the ocean, he dies two or three times, but it's like the whole aspect of Doomsday, how they kept killing this creature until it became this unstoppable beast. And it's kind of what they do with Godzilla here, where he has two or three different forms before he becomes, like, you know, King of the Monsters Godzilla. And it may or may not take place in an alternate future from the original 1954 Godzilla, because there's this skeleton of a previous kaiju, which may or may not have been Gojira. And I'm just wondering if I should just stop hoping for anime based on licenses that I love to make sense. Because I rewatched it. I watched it twice just because, like, I'm trying to understand the story and I still can't understand the bloody story. And I just kind of thought about, if I can't understand Godzilla, do I have a hope hell of understanding Fate?
If you just go in without trying to fuck around with sticking the pieces of paper together with string, you'll be fine, because I don't care enough to do that. I'm not even going to go into the fucking melty blood connections and shit.
Okay, so don't go full Pepe Sylvia is what you're telling me.
Yeah, just go in. Pick a series, watch it, enjoy it. You know, treat it like fucking Zelda. Like, there is no timeline. Nothing is connected. Just each one is his own, like, encapsulated thing, and you might see some of the same characters again. The basic rules of the universe are the same with each one. Enjoy it.
And I haven't played Zelda since the Super Nintendo. Gotta be honest, it's just... I mean, I love the original two games, but after Super Nintendo, I never played anything on, like, Majora's Mask or anything beyond that, like Super NES. As far as rambling, like, I recently went to the store for the first time in forever because, you know, been a little short in funds for a while, but, you know, I got a nice Christmas bonus check, so I had to treat myself. And I didn't think I was going to enjoy this series, but I bought all the issues that had come out so far because I'm a fan of the character. It is the current Robin series from DC, where essentially Damian goes to Lazarus Island, where nobody can die because the whole place is basically suffused with the Lazarus Pit chemicals, and he's fighting in DC's version of Mortal Kombat. And it's the art's done by the guy who's done a lot of the Batman Fear State art from some of those titles, and you see some new fighter characters. You got this new character named Flatline, who's this girl who's like the sidekick to Lord Deathman, who is one of my favorite characters to come out of the whole Grant Morrison Batman run, which is, of course, based on this. For those that don't know, folks, Lord Deathman is a character that came out of the Bat manga series of the 50s and 60s in Japan, where he's this guy who he's a yogi who can fake being dead, and he uses that to fuck with Batman and Robin until he's finally killed, or so we think. And the deadliest fighter in this tournament isn't Damian, it's Connor Hawk. And they finally brought that character back into DC Comics after basically missing from the canon since the onset of the New 52. And then you find out the lady running the tournament is Damian's great-grandmother, because she's the mother of Ra's al Ghul. And then to bring it back to the whole grindhouse thing, this is what I love about comics. I love batshit insanity and copious amounts of physical violence. And I highly recommend you guys check this out because it's just that much fun. There's no Batman. The rest of the Robins show up one issue to try and bring Damian back to Gotham. And he basically cuts a deal with Nightwing for everyone else to fuck off and let him do this. And they're basically, whoever wins this is going to cause the end of the world. So now Damian has to save the world by kicking Connor Hawk's ass.
Which he shouldn't be able to, because Connor Hawk is the best fucking martial artist in the DC universe.
I know. So I can't wait to see what kind of bullshit Bruce Wayne level of cheating that Damian's going to have to do to, you know, defeat Connor and save the world. But they also have this guy called Respawn, who's, and when I say thinly veiled, I mean by the slimmest of veils, is like a knock on Deadpool, because, you know, it's this guy who's like a Deathstroke fanboy in a Deathstroke Deadpool combo cosplay. Ravager's in there. They've got a whole bunch of like made up characters just for this series that. This is the sort of thing, like, they just turned this into a fighting game, I would be ecstatic. And it's been a while since I've been really excited for something from DC. Like, you know, it's not like the rest of the internet, and I'm saying this to the readers, Ben and Red already know this. I'm not one of those ones that, you know, lost my shit when Jonathan Kent was revealed to be bi. I was like, okay, fine. It's a fictional character. They're doing something that hasn't been done with a character in the Superman family. It doesn't bother me. Or the people that have cried for years that bad defund Batman and just have Bruce Wayne spend his money, which is why we have Bruce Wayne. He's only a millionaire now instead of a billionaire, and he doesn't have control of Wayne Enterprises anymore. This Robin is, like I've said before in the show, everything that I love about comics. So batshit's fun. Batshit insane idea, a fun execution, the art's on point, the writing's great. Why can't we have more fun comics like this? So
interesting. Well, we're getting close to your time being up, JT.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to cut this right here. So this is our ramble. I hope you enjoyed it. Go ahead, Red.
There was something I did want to bring up.
Okay, bring it up.
What do you want?
Legendary artist George Perez was diagnosed with stage 3 cancer.
Oh, fuck.
Shit. I had not heard that.
I loved his Wonder Woman reboot.
just love his art.
He's been given 6 months to a year to live.
Fuck.
And he's refusing any treatment.
That's hardcore.
Well, we hope the best for you, Georgia. Sorry to hear that. Damn. Next week, let's talk about the George Perez Wonder Woman some more, because I love that.
George Perez.
George Perez is, yeah, next week let's do that, George Perez. Anyways, any other final thoughts tonight, guys?
I was going to ask you guys real quick before we go, what's a comic series or miniseries that you guys think is just fun, like your idea of a good, fun comic? You know, give me some homework.
All right, well, we tried to give you some homeworks. Double spaced, blah, 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 blah. All right, this is your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Writing.
We're saying goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.